Are you ready for a war?
It's a trap.
Game over, man. Game over.
She's just killed a helicopter with a car.
How's that foot?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the BCD Flixtures Podcast. I'm your host, Caleb, and right over here I've got...
Bama.
And...
Daniel Stahl.
Always reliable, always true, always honest.
Most of the time.
Today is November 2nd, 2012, and we will be reviewing Punch Drunk Love starring Adam Sandler. But first, we're going to go ahead and move into the box office results from last weekend and talk about some big news. And believe me, there was some big news.
There's always a bigger fish.
It's huge! Massive.
It's a trap! Last week's box office results were interesting, to say the least. We had two new releases, but neither of them was number one. The movie that was number one was a movie that had actually been out for 3 weeks already. Number one was Argo, with $12.4 million. That's the Ben Affleck thriller, historical thriller. Really great. It's got some legs. It's climbing the box office ladder slowly but surely. Great. Love the movie. It's good for it. Number two, still not a new one. Hotel Transylvania at $9.5 million. Wow. I know. Shocking. Right? I'm just saying, like, these movies have been out for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. It's been on the box office, I think, for the past three podcasts.
Yeah. So. And it's number two. It was a real slow week because $9.5 million, and that's not a very strong. I mean, that's number two. Sadly, number three, Cloud Atlas with $9.4 million. It was really close. I actually managed to catch Cloud Atlas this weekend. Guys, it was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. The way they reused actors in over six different storylines taking place over thousands of years. I'm not going to go into too much of it, but I'd say check out a trailer for it. Look at it. The Wachowski siblings and Tom Twyker were doing some really ambitious stuff, and they managed to actually pull it off. That's all I'll say, but definitely give it a look. I'm actually going to try to go back and see that one a second time in the theater if I can.
Yeah, I still need to catch that one, too.
All right, number four, thank God, Paranormal Activity 4, 8.6. This is one of those, came out, its whole audience showed up the first weekend, incredibly front-loaded. They didn't come back for seconds, that's what it looks like. And number five was a two-way tie behind Taken and Taken 2 and Silent Hill Revelation 3D. Not shocking. Silent Hill, really, I was expecting to do a little better than that, but I didn't expect it to be very big. So I guess it will be silenced at the box office this next weekend.
Wow. That was terrible.
Well, we're going to go ahead and move into some news items. Really, I've only got one that I want to talk about before we move into the behemoth of a Death Star that we're going to talk about here in a second. When I was growing up, getting more acquainted with a lot of the ins and outs of entertainment, one thing that really got me plugged in before I was even on gaming websites like IGN, which I've been reading for years and years, but one thing came before that as far as like my entertainment gaming fix that I got, and that was G4 TV. Now, G4, I haven't watched regularly in the past couple years just because I don't have the channel available to me, and it's just harder for me to get around and watch everything online. But going back to the early days of that, that channel was a big influence on me and inspiring me to really get really excited about the things I'm passionate about with movies and games and things like that. And you had big names like Adam Sessler and Kevin Pereira, Morgan Webb, some of these people who are still around, some of them not. Sarah Lang, lots of names that were there in the early days of G4. Now, G4, for those of you who don't know, it's a channel that built its name off of video gaming. It was at one point known as Tech TV, and they only focused on video games, and that's pretty much it. You get some entertainment stuff in there. Attack of the Show was the least nerdy thing on there because they tried to appeal to a wider audience by doing movies and stuff like that. Over the years, that whole network has shifted. They've gotten into the whole thing where they, instead of doing video game stuff, they've played stuff like Cops. They've re-syndicated lots of shows. But I had some sad news that came out the other day that G4 is going through a rebranding process, and they are cutting two of their shows that have been on that channel for years, and again, very influential in my passion. They're canceling Attack of the Show and X-Play in the rebranding process, and they're going to move towards something that's a lot more like Spike TV. This is really sad. When I saw this, I kind of sat there for a few minutes and was kind of mourning, and I don't know if either one of you have any ties to this channel at all.
I remember actually the transition between Tech TV to it being G4. I didn't really watch it a whole lot. I was able to catch some of it when I was younger. Haven't really kept up with it the past few years. But I do remember it being very entertaining, very informative about, you know, content of games coming up. They would review old games. I mean, just overall a really, really good channel.
They had great stuff. Like, even if you were just on the channel, you knew it was video game related. They had stuff like Cinematech. All they did was play trailers for games. But if you were bored and you're like, I want to do something gaming, bam, Cinematech, half an hour. You know, you had great stuff like that. You had Attack of the Show, which was a variety show that at one point did movies and games, and eventually they started to move into lots of other forms of media, comic books. They've really been trying to find their identity for years when you think about it since then. But they tried a lot of different things that didn't work. But yeah, this really hit me to the core. I'm thinking back to, you've got, like, not only did they review games, which always really funny, they did skits. X-Play did lots of skits. You had stuff like Johnny Extreme's Adventure, you know, the guy riding the sharks, and he had the rocket launcher that fired flaming chainsaws.
Lots of funny stuff.
They had, like, a zombie apocalypse episode. They did lots of great stuff. Like, this thing called Ratty. They did the best E.T. episode where they made fun of the fact that they buried the E.T. Atari copies. They did a search for the E.T. E.T. cartridges episode. I mean, just lots of great stuff. I have lots of great memories tied to that channel. And, you know, even over the years, I still listen to their feedback podcast. But I don't want to spend too much more time on this. But, you know, this was something that really hit me at an emotional level, realizing that foundation I had, a lot of my foundation for that comes from that network with those shows inspiring me to do some great stuff. And, you know, if by any chance, you know, Adam Sessler, Kevin Pereira, or Morgan Webb ever somehow pick up this podcast, I just want to say thank you guys so much for telling me it's okay to be nerdy. And, in fact, lavish in it. Enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. And have fun with it. Because it was really inspiring to me to see people who love the stuff as much as I did, and they were able to go out and make a really great, great career out of it. So I just want to say thanks to that and thanks to G4. And it's really going to be missed. It's going to have a... There's going to be a place in my heart for that network always. All right, we're going to move on to we're really only going to talk about one other news item this week, which is
massive.
The Nerd World had a nuke dropped on it on Tuesday.
It's probably as big as a moon.
I mean, seriously.
That's no moon.
It's a space station. All right. And no, folks, I promise, it's not a trap.
This is no trap.
This is real.
Okay. Lucasfilm was bought by Disney for $4.08 billion. George Lucas is no longer running the company. Kathleen Kennedy, I believe is her name, stepped in. She's going to be the co-runner. She's going to be the president of the company. George Lucas is going to remain on board as a creative consultant. And they announced a new Star Wars trilogy will begin in 2015 when they have a release. Now, so not only did Lucasfilm get bought, they announced, we're going to have stuff coming your way 3 years. So think about this. 3 years from now, we're going to have the Avengers movie, Avengers 2, sorry. You're going to have Justice League movie, and you're going to have a Star Wars movie.
Good grief.
So that alone, nerds have to celebrate for.
This is going to be ridiculous.
But I just want to see what do you guys think about this? I mean, because I actually sat there for a good, I mean, like, the rest of the evening, really, as I was thinking about it, it was just so unreal, because it just seemed like something that would never happen. In fact, when I read it, like, the first thing on my mind was like, this is a joke. But then realizing, wait, it's not April Fool's Day. They wouldn't post like crap like this today. Yeah. And realizing and sitting there thinking about it, I was like, wow, I just don't even know what to think about this. And I think I've got my opinions, but I want to see what you guys think first.
Well, as far as them making more Star Wars movies, I think this is going to be kind of a step forward a little bit as far as acting and just overall writing of the whole thing. Now, George Lucas creates a beautiful picture, you know, of his story and everything. But gosh dang it, the guy cannot write a script to save his life.
He can't.
I mean, beautiful battle scenes. Episode 1 probably had some of my most favorite.
You're breaking my heart. You're going down a path I can't follow.
Please stop. Oh my gosh.
You didn't tear up in that scene? I mean,
No, I wanted to jump through the movie screen and punch
you somebody. Turned her against me?
I think the overall writing of this whole thing, especially dialogue-wise, is going to be much better. And since Disney has pretty much everything from Star Wars now, that for those of you that play Kingdom Hearts, I'm definitely seeing something about this in the future. I mean, I did not even think about that.
I didn't even cross my mind.
I mean, nothing has been said about this, but I thought about this. I've watched some videos on Kingdom Hearts, and I just instantly thought lightsaber keyblade.
They can now go to a galaxy far, far away.
A long time ago.
Oh my gosh! You know, I was so locked on the idea of a Marvel Star Wars crossover. Not that it'll ever happen, but the fact that it's even plausible now. Yeah. This could actually happen. I didn't even think about the Kingdom Hearts thing. Stoll, what did you think about this whole these shenanigans here?
My first reaction was, you're lying, because you're actually the one that sent me a text, and I literally texted back, you're lying, or are you serious? Like, I didn't even believe it at first. After I looked it up, things like that, I realized that this is actually happening. My immediate reaction was, this is awesome. I was super stoked. I'm super excited for it. Don't know who's behind it, don't know who's in it, don't know what the story's going to be or anything, but I still think it's awesome because it's Star Wars, and I think it's awesome. So that's kind of my raw, natural reaction. I've already tossed around several ideas with different people about what they could actually do and stuff like that. So, you know, you've got the fanboy talking, kind of things like that. So as a fanboy, I'm super excited to see another Star Wars come out.
And there's so many directions they can go through because, I mean, people have written multiple series about what happens after.
This is something just before recording the podcast, I just read this. It is going to be an original story.
Oh, okay.
So it is not going to be based off any book adapts or anything. They are going to do their own original story. Now, they still didn't say it's going to necessarily follow up with Luke, Leia, and Han at all. They just said they are telling a story that will be original. So it won't be based off any books. So for any of you hoping to get that Thrawn series out there that everyone loves so much, that's not happening, guys. They are doing a totally original story.
I'll be okay with that as long as they make a reference to, like, something that Han or Luke or Leia or even Chewbacca, you know, as long as they make some kind of reference to something that they did. And you'd have to, but, I mean,
fanboys would cry out in anger if you didn't do that.
That's the one thing that I've kind of thought that was interesting about this is if it does bad, there will be so much anger thrown back at Disney for this happening. Like, if it does not do good or does not fit the fanboys' approval, there could be a lot of anger caused because
Disney could die in 2015.
I'm just saying if they like bring someone like Michael Bay on to direct, I said, what if they announce something like
Absolutely not.
Well, you know how many fanboys would literally this wouldn't shock me if Michael Bay died because these are Star Wars fans we're talking about here, guys. These are like the hardcore of the hardcore of the hardcore.
There would be so many explosions in that movie.
But, you know, here's what I think. And I don't like the idea of Disney owning so much of my childhood because they've got Marvel over here and they've got Star Wars over here. That's cool. But if they buy, like, Nintendo, I mean, not that they will, I'm saying, but they own, these are the holy grails of my childhood. I mean, luckily I know they're never going to get their hands on DC Comics. But this bothers me, the fact they have so much control over, you know, my past, my memories, and seeing what we're going to do with it, with stuff I love next. But, on the other hand, I'm totally with you guys. I would love to see someone other than George Lucas write the script, direct the movie. George, you know, he gave us Star Wars. He did a great job. And despite the fact that the prequels may not have been perfect, I like them. Does that mean they're amazing? No. I just am not one of those fanboys who is utterly like, the prequels just ruin everything. I'm like, you know what? Get over it. Star Wars is made for kids. If you can't get past that fact, grow up. Grow up and act like a kid again. Seriously.
Yeah, I really like the prequels, though. In fact, I never called them prequels until recently when I realized that people called them prequels. I always thought, no, they're not prequels. That's just part of the story. That's episode 1, 2, and 3.
Well, so, and the thing is, they're just some jaded people out there. They really hate. I have fans who said, well, Disney cannot do a worse job than it's already been done to it. I was like, wow. I mean, yeah. I think they could pretty easily do a worse job if they get in the wrong hands. I mean, look at Bo on director Star Wars or something like that.
I personally thought episode 1, 2, and 3 was awesome. So
I have issues with them. The dialogue is just god awful.
I'm with you on that, but it's Star Wars.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like I get behind it, and you know that's the thing about Star Wars. People, the flaws people complain about in the prequels, some of those flaws are still in the originals. You just kind of gloss over it because you grew up with them, but because you're more critical as an adult, you're more critical of them in the prequels, which is I think something interesting. That George Lucas said, hey, I never changed who I was making Star Wars for. I was always making it for kids' movies. You know, I actually ran across IGN, did an article on this, where they found a clip from back in the 70s when George Lucas said, well, when I was designing this series, I had kids in mind. So for all those of you fanboys who are just driven to think that George Lucas has always made these for more adults or people that are growing up, no, he hasn't. He hasn't changed his target audience. He's still making it for kids. Not that adults can't, we can't love it, because I think there are a lot of things out there that are made for kids that we can all love. But anyway, I would be really excited to see if we get new directors. What if you got like a J.J. Abrams or a Joss Whedon type of figure? Not these two people, not even necessarily these people specifically, but people who love Star Wars. People who are huge fans of Star Wars, who are going to want to make the best possible movie out there because they feel like they owe it to the material.
Those two guys would be my top choices.
You know, and I think about all the directors. There's not a filmmaker out there in Hollywood, at least making blockbuster Hollywood movies anyhow, that isn't influenced by Star Wars. It's so ingrained into the movie culture that everyone's got some inspiration from that somewhere, somehow. And I think that's the nice thing about having these people go on. These people have, like, they feel like they owe it to Star Wars to make a good movie. So hopefully they get on the right people. You know, people joke, Damon Lindelof, I follow this guy on Twitter. And you know what? We need to, like, start ringing a bell every time I mention this guy's name. So I'm pretty sure I've mentioned him every week so far. But he tweets. He's funny. I'll talk about him a lot. But he was tweeting, you know, that he joked about doing the script for a Star Wars movie. I would be a huge fan. However, I'm pretty sure, kind of like Michael Bay, there would be fans out there who are just like, let's kill that freaking douchebag who wrecked Lost and Prometheus. So, I don't know. I think he'd be kind of a cool choice because he's a big Star Wars fan. I mean, think of like guys like that, those kind of nerd icons that have always talked about how much they love Star Wars. What if they actually got to make a Star Wars?
It'd be really cool.
I mean, yeah, that'd be awesome. Got to throw this out there. I've talked about this with several people, and everyone that I've talked to about it has said awesome idea. Have no idea if it's even in their minds about doing it. But Star Wars 7, prequel, a prequel to Episode 1, all about Qui-Gon Jinn and his relationship with getting Obi-Wan. That would be awesome. Well, I think it would be awesome, personally, because yeah. Qui-Gon Jinn's like my favorite Jedi. So
I think that would be cool, but guess what? That's not going to happen.
I know, because it's called Star Wars 7. Yeah. So it's probably not a prequel.
It's not a prequel.
It would still be awesome.
It'll be.
I mean, they could do that. And Disney, the way they're going to run this puppy, I mean, they might have that in a book or a comic book or... You know how Star Wars is, like, overly saturated the market right now? Guess what? Disney's bought it. You know what that means? It's going to become even more oversaturated. Yeah, it's going to get ridiculous. You're going to have more stories like that popping out. So maybe there'll be a cartoon about that. Maybe there'll be a short movie about it. You know? Yeah, so that's not the real possibility.
The only reason I want that is because Qui-Gon Jinn's probably one of my favorite Jedi.
He is pretty awesome.
So I want more from Qui-Gon Jinn. He's kind of hippie. So
let's be honest here, though.
He's what?
There's nothing wrong with that. I like hippies. But I mean, actually, I don't take that back. I don't like hippies. But I do like Qui-Gon Jinn.
Qui-Gon Jinn's awesome.
One thing that I would love to see, just because of interaction between characters, especially since Disney has Marvel, if they did a comic book with Star Wars characters and Deadpool.
That'd be funny.
It would be hilarious. I mean...
That would never be canon ever, though.
No. It would just be an interesting crossover, I think. Just Deadpool just making fun of everybody. Marvel does it all the time.
You know, people, I'll say this much on the subject of Star Wars. Check out the 3D animated show on Cartoon Network. The first season's a little rough. The movie was terrible. I would admit the movie was terrible because all it was three episodes strung together. That cartoon has some of the richest Star Wars storytelling I've ever seen. Just throwing it out there. I haven't watched the latest season 5 yet, but I've seen seasons 1 through 4, and there's some really cool stuff in there. Don't write it off. Okay, so what do you guys think about maybe bringing back Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, and Mark Hamill? I've heard a lot of people talking about that.
I think they definitely could pull off Harrison Ford.
I think he's the only one that could pull off, but go ahead. I want to hear what else you think.
I think it'd be awesome if they brought him back. I'm all for bringing him back because he can pull it off. It'd be really hard to do a Mark Hamill, I feel like, him playing Luke.
Yeah, he's older. I mean, I don't take this the wrong way. I freaking love Mark Hamill. He's one of my favorite voice actors of all time. I think he's excellent. I follow him on Twitter. Huge fan of his. He's just not in shape to play that role. I mean, at least if he is, it'd be an incredibly minimal job. I mean, he'd be like almost a borderline cameo type of thing.
Yeah, I would be happy with cameos from all three of them.
Cameos would be good. I think they could actually bring Harrison Ford in for more than a significant role than cameo.
Yeah, I feel like they could bring in Harrison Ford. Now, I don't know if they will, but I think it'd be kind of cool because he actually is still in shape. His career is the point where I could see him viably doing something like that. So, yeah, maybe like a grandfather figure or whatever. I think Carrie Fisher should not show up anymore on that screen. Any other thoughts on the big Star Wars bomb? I'll admit, I am skeptical. I don't know if I got to that. I am a little worried. I am a little skeptical, but I think the possibility of having new blood in there is awesome. But I will be the skeptic on this. I'm not. I'm excited, but I'm cautiously excited. You know, I was thinking too, what if they get a backer like Disney? Maybe they could finally make that live-action Star Wars TV show happen. They've been talking about that for years, like I think since like 2006. Now, for those of you who don't know what the Star Wars live-action show is, there's been not a whole lot released about it, but off and on, they get asked about it because they were Lucas and Rick McCollin were hyping this thing up way back in 06. They said, we're going to come out and make a live-action TV show. Finds out, in the last couple of years, they've come out and said, we actually have over 50 scripts for this thing done. The thing is, we just can't afford to do it because we don't want the quality to drop. We want it to be cinematic like a movie. But we also can't afford to do that because it's so expensive. And the concept is, the base concept that all they've really said about it is, it would be something like The Sopranos set on Coruscant. So probably would have nothing to do with the main storyline at all, but it would be sounds really sick. I would totally be on board with that. So maybe now they've got a backer like Disney, they can make that happen. Maybe for like an ABC or something, since Disney owns ABC, they get on in like an ABC type channel. Because I mean, Star Wars, people are going to watch, even if they hate it, they're going to sit there and watch it.
Oh, yeah.
At least for a while. All right, well, that's enough of that. We're going to go ahead and move on to our review of the week. Our review of the week is Punch Drunk Love. Punch Drunk Love is a film by writer, producer, and director Paul Thomas Anderson, who tells a story about Barry Egan, who is played by Adam Sandler, who owns a company that sells plungers. Barry is the only guy in his family, the only man in his family, which has led to him feeling very suppressed as he's always had his sisters and his mom and all these women figures beating him down in life emotionally, and they just kind of chew him out, stuff kind of like that. Well, in the beginning of the movie, Egan witnesses a car crash, which leads to him picking up a harmonium, an instrument, and he meets a lady from the car crash named Lena, who is played by Emily Watson, who seems to fancy Barry. Barry goes through times when he feels incredibly alone, and one night is so alone that he calls a phone sex line just so he can have a conversation with another person on an intimate level. However, he doesn't really have phone sex with her. I just thought that was kind of interesting. Like, he really wasn't calling for the phone sex.
Yeah, he was just calling to have a conversation.
He just wanted someone to talk to.
He wanted someone to talk to. He felt really alone. Well, the phone sex worker ends up running a scan on him, and he's able to get all of his information, bank account, phone numbers, social security number, which just kind of wrecks his life. Now, at the same time of all this scam going on, Barry eventually gets tracked down by a group of guys who are tied to the phone sex worker, and they beat him up and take his money, and they harass him. They won't leave him alone. They're like, well, you can't run because we know where you live and all this other stuff. Well, at the same time as all this stuff's going on, Barry must deal with the situation as he slowly overcomes his awkward loner personality that he has as he actually ends up pursuing a relationship with Lena. That's kind of the base premise, and let's go ahead and see what you guys think about it.
I thought this movie was pretty good. Noticeably very short. I think it was only like an hour and 30 minutes long, somewhere around there. It was fairly good. I'm not going to say I enjoyed it greatly. I'm not going to say that I loved it, but it was very good. As we said, not a typical Sandler movie, but a good Sandler movie, I would say. I mean, he's done, you know, Click, which was a non-typical Sandler movie, which I really enjoyed that. One thing about this was just the pacing seemed pretty weird in this movie. I don't know if y'all noticed it, but okay, we're going really fast here for a minute and then kind of slowing down.
Well, like they'd skip over all these events and then they would stop and focus on this one event.
Yeah, and it's just, there's a lot of jumping around in it. You know, it's not terrible, but it's not great, I would say.
All right, so what are your thoughts? Base thoughts. We're going to get more into depth here in a second.
I thought it was a little bit weird. Don't know really how I feel about it. I thought the dark humor in it was hilarious. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I thought the dark humor in it was hilarious. Every time that something happened in a dark humor kind of way, I laughed. It was really funny.
It's like car crash happens and we're sitting there laughing our butts off at it.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Someone when I just died, we were laughing at it. Yeah, you know.
I will say this. I feel like Adam Sandler did an excellent job for his character. The character that's kind of socially awkward. He had seven sisters, by the way. So he had seven sisters and his mom. So that's eight women in his family that kind of like beat him down a little bit. So I thought he did a really exceptional job as an actor for this movie. But my own personal raw reaction was kind of, I don't know about this.
This was an interesting movie. It's, for those of you who know who Paul Thomas Anderson is, he's a great director. He has gone on to direct some great films like There Will Be Blood, more recently The Master. This movie was one of his earlier works, and I think it shows I don't know if I like it. I don't like it as much as a lot of his other stuff. There's a lot in this movie I really do like that I think works. That we're going to get into it here in a second. I did like Sandler's performance. That was probably one of the best parts of the movie. And like all of Anderson's other movies, it's very much a character study in the truest sense. Like, there's not really a plot. There is, you follow this guy around and see what he does and see where he's at the beginning and where he's at the end, and you kind of analyze it and try to figure out what is Anderson trying to say about humanity? What is he trying to say about this character? What is he trying to say as about the world we live in? That's the nice thing, the interesting thing about Paul Anderson movies is they're very open-ended. And when I say that, I mean, like, it's not even like it's open-ended in the sense they just leave plot holes or leave things open like that. It's just to what does this movie mean? You know, what is all this weird stuff that Sandler's doing? What does that mean about us? What does that say about us? But we'll go ahead and start about the character of Barry and talk about Sandler's performance a little bit. I thought he did an excellent job. As we've said a couple times, he was in a family full of women, and he's a lot of repression going on. Like, he's kind of lollydaws around. He can tell he's frustrated about something. As soon as he gets by himself, he punches crap, tears stuff down, throws fits, tantrums by himself.
He actually he's at a restaurant with Lena, and he gets upset, and he goes into the bathroom, and he literally destroys their bathroom.
Yeah, he, takes down the wall, stomps on the toilet, and everything like that. Yeah, yeah. And he has stuff like that several times, actually, which I find kind of interesting. But by the end of the movie, his character's changed. We'll get more into that in the spoiler section. But let's just say this. Barry has a habit of running away, and there's several shots in this movie that show him running away from something. Several times. There's some great cinematography here, actually, where you see him running on this hallway with a full of exit signs above the doors. And it's just like this. It looks like an infinite hallway of exit signs. And you see him running away. And then the next scene, he's like, crap, Lena wants me. So he runs back. It's really interesting the way they use the camera angles in this movie to kind of to speak for what's going on. So thoughts on Barry?
I enjoyed the character. You can definitely tell just from some of the opening scenes that this character has had somewhat of a troubled past because he's slightly awkward around people, doesn't really know how to act, and it's because of his sisters throughout the movie. Well, he gets calls from his sisters, and you know, one of them's just constantly berating him, and then
she's always calling him weird. Though, oh, he's so weird.
Yeah.
You're so weird. Why don't you have a girlfriend? Which I thought, when you mentioned how awkward he acts, that girl Lena, he sees her, and he actually has kind of a thing for her. He's always wearing the suit. He always wants to be presentable and appear attractive to her. But when he actually comes to conversation with her, he's super awkward.
He has no idea what to say
and even acts kind of like a jerk. I mean, would come across like a jerk when he actually likes her, but he doesn't know how to react to the situation.
A very good background for a character, I think, and a really cool concept. You could kind of say that this was a pre-anger management type movie, which Anger Management...
This almost could be a crossover. Yeah. Almost.
I mean, Anger Management came out a year after this one did, so...
Well, it is interesting because, I mean, I'm telling you, Barry really did seem like he had that internal anger when I was thinking about that. I'm like, I remember when Jack Nicholson explains the whole interior anger and exterior anger, and I was like, Barry has interior anger. He's the guy who shoots everyone in the store.
And then he releases it. I mean, not only from the scenes of him destroying the bathroom and him breaking all the windows at that party. His sisters talk about how he threw a hammer through one of the windows, a sliding glass door at their house when they were kids. So you can tell that there's a lot of pent up anger in this character. One thing I noticed about Barry's anger whenever it came out of him and he, you know, started breaking stuff, there was always some kind of trigger to it. When he was with his family at the party, when they brought up him throwing the hammer through the glass door, that's when it finally triggered in him, and then he started breaking the glass at the party. It was also brought up when he went on the date with Lena, and then he goes into the bathroom and starts destroying stuff. Now, there's other points in the movie where he's being kind of chivalrous, doing the good deed and being the man that he really wants to be, like when he gets in the wreck with those four brothers that are coming after him. So he sees that Lena is hurt, and he decides, I've got to step up. I've got to do something. I'm taking these guys out.
And he's angry, you know, at a lot of things. And it's really interesting when he's angry. He's really angry about his own awkwardness. Like, you can tell, like, his moments where he really wanted to talk to Lena, And when it came up, and he knew he bombed, and he would just get, and that's when he would get upset. He was like, you could tell he really wanted to talk to her, but when he actually had, when he realized he failed, he would get so upset, you know? So it's like he realized his own awkwardness. He just know how to handle his own awkwardness. But we'll get into, let's get into Lena a little bit. She was a little bit an oddball. This actually, honestly, they make a pretty odd couple, if you ask me. She was kind of odd, because you find out later in the movie that she really got in the wreck at the beginning of the movie intentionally because she wanted to meet him. But again, she was also kind of awkward and didn't know how to talk to him. So she set up a scenario in which she got in a wreck so she could meet him. And she actually knew about him through one of his sisters who she had seen a picture of. And she said, that's when I knew that I was in love with you, when I saw that picture.
Yeah, I agree with you that Lena's definitely awkward, definitely kind of weird. One thing that I observed, and that was the thing with this movie, I observed a lot of things that are very interesting, but I don't know the point of them. For example, the first time you meet Lena, she comes in with her car and stuff like that. There is a major lens flare on the scene.
Oh, yes, the lens flare.
On the screen. It's so bad that you can't even really picture her face is the first time you meet her. Like, you can see Adam Sandler just fine, but there's a major lens flare right over her face. You can barely tell who she is. Like I said, I observed that. I don't know really what the director's trying to say by that, but that I kind of absorbed that. So that was kind of weird. You didn't really ever get to see her until later on in the movie. Like, I even had to question myself. I was like, is that the same lady that we met? Because I didn't even recognize her. That's how bad the flare was. But it was obviously intentional. The flare was intentional, so I don't really know the purpose of it. But yeah, she's definitely weird, definitely awkward. I mean, seems like she genuinely cares about him, though. I mean, just a, I don't really feel like they gave us a lot about her character. You just see Adam Sandler's or Barry's reaction to what she does. But we don't really have a lot of background story on her. We don't really know who she is. Kind of like, oh, it's just this girl who has an interest in him. That's all she really is.
Yeah, that's a good point. She isn't really the emphasis. We'll go ahead, before we move into our spoiler section, what do you guys think about the overall style of the movie? Now, you mentioned lens flare. This movie, Anderson uses a lot of their interesting techniques in his movies, but I've never seen him use lens flare so much. There was a lot of lens flare. Like, I was like, wow, this is like, he's beating J.J. Abrams on lens flare uses here. Holy crap. I mean, they use it in the car. They use it when they're in the car. And they use it in the garage. And they use it to blind her face out. They use it anytime he's running somewhere, you see lens flare. I mean, so very, obviously very intentional. But even myself, I was having a hard time figuring out what exactly is Anderson trying to say with this. And that's how he works in a lot of his movies. And usually I can kind of figure stuff out. This one, they even have to chew on this one for a while. I could not figure out what he was trying to do with the lens flare. But what do you guys think about some of his other styles?
One thing that was interesting to me is three times during the movie, the scenes stop and this rainbow color image comes on. And it's like a really like a psychedelic song comes on and you see all this. And it lasts there for about 10 seconds, and then it just cuts back to the movie, and you're kind of like, what's going on? So I thought the style was unique. I haven't seen many with that kind of style. We talked about the pacing a little bit earlier. It was a little weird. Like, it was just different and unique. I was not really accustomed to it in any kind of way. So it was kind of a shock, I guess, to me, because I wasn't used to viewing the film in that kind of way. So for me, it was a little bit hard to dissect for me because it was so foreign to me.
One thing that it was weird for me about this, with this kind of style, was the harmonium that he got at the beginning of the film. It's like, it appears, and you can tell that, I mean, especially at the beginning, that there's something about this thing. Because, I mean, he does a few shots, you know, different angles on it. And then he takes it, puts it in his office, fixes it up a little bit. Later in the movie, he takes it to Lena to apologize. We'll get into that later. But it's like, was there actually a point for this thing? I mean, because typically when you look at something at different angles, Anderson used, there's something that's going to happen with this object or whatever that's going to be point turning or just something significant within the movie. But it actually ended up not really doing anything.
Yeah, that's one thing I did notice. Was that the movie doesn't give you a lot of answers to almost anything at all. Like, there are a lot of things that happen, and you're like, well, how did that happen? And the film doesn't really tell you. You just kind of see Barry's reaction to it and how he uses the things that go on. So in that sense, it's all about Barry and how does he respond. But the movie doesn't tell you a lot of what's going on and why it's going on. found that to be kind of interesting.
Well, you get a lot of, you do get some whys, like I said, with the with Blaine and the car crash. You do find out a little bit there with the harmonium. Why does he keep it? I don't know. He seemed like he's got with some weird OCD like tendencies. He was doing something without the movie. At the end, he got it. It seemed like he wanted to play something for Lena, but I'm not really 100% sure. Here's the thing about Anderson. Like I said, when I say open interpretation, that is quite literally what I mean. It's not even like they just leave a big open question they throw at you. It's just like you're like at the end, you're like, what does this movie mean? And we're about to get into what at least I think this movie means, and maybe if you guys have some ideas, you can chip in here in the spoiler section. One last thing I will point out that before we go into spoilers is Anderson's movie, his style is written all over this, and this is certainly not a movie that your average moviegoer, I think, is going to respond very well to. In fact, I've heard a very large number of people say that they absolutely despise this film. They think it's Adam Sandler's worst movie. I've heard this from several people over the course of the last 10 years, or, well, however long it's been since it came out. So I think going into this, you need to have an understanding that this is not your, not only is this not your average Adam Sandler movie, this is not your average movie. Anderson has a very unique style that is completely unique to him. You don't see it anywhere else. And what he's really doing is looking at characters and trying to figure out what that character says about, as I've said, the world we live in, humanity. So let's go ahead and move into spoilers.
Spoiler alert!
Okay, at the end of the movie, he makes it. Him and Lena work out. Through a really odd set of events, he pursues her halfway across the world, or halfway across the country, and they fall in love. He leaves her in the hospital, and they go and kiss and make up, which I was kind of surprised by. I really thought that she was going to break it off with him. But in the end, you see this relationship that has an odd sort of love to it. And I think this is what the movie is really about, obviously, in the title, Punch Drunk Love. But my take on the movie is that Anderson is looking at Adam Sandler, this socially awkward. He has a thing for looking at odd people, okay, when I say this. And with this movie, it's probably the most positive of his movies I've seen, any of them, sending off what he's saying about humanity, which is, I think you're finding that love is possible. I think he's saying people are really weird, and life is full of surprises. And you can see that throughout the movie, you have this guy who's always running away, and he finds something, and it's not like romanticized love. It's love. You can tell it clicks, but it's not like you see in most movies where it's really played up and romanticized. It's just, no. It's a weird, kind of awkward relationship, but they really click with each other. So love can be found in all the right places, even among quirky people. I know this movie did some real interesting stuff with the camera work, obviously, like I said, with the guy running around. But you also saw stuff that the soundtrack in this movie, I loved it. This might be my favorite Anderson soundtrack. If you guys watch any of his other movies, he has really weird soundtracks. I actually had someone when I was screening this movie said, man, is this supposed to be obnoxious? I personally didn't find it obnoxious. I felt like it added a real beat to the scene. But it is so unlike any soundtrack you're going to see in your average movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the music with this. One of my favorite parts just pertaining to music was, I believe, when he first meets the brothers that are beating him up and trying to get the money from him, and he ends up running away, going through some alleys and stuff. To me, as I was watching it, it sounded like it was a horror film.
Yes.
Type thing. You know, running away from the super strong bad guy with a machete coming at you. But it's like, that's not what's going on at all. So the music in this could really make you feel emotions at a greater level than what you really should be. For what's happening on the screen.
It's just starting to heighten you at that moment. And then,
Oh, I think that's fair, and I understand why you guys are saying that. I think it does do that in a sense, but personally, I did not like the soundtrack. I found it for me personally, I found it to be kind of annoying at times, honestly. And I'm not saying that makes it, that for me, the sounds that were being made was kind of like, man, come on, like let's get over it. But I understand what you're saying, trying to build the,
And maybe it wanted you. Maybe you were supposed to have that kind of reaction to the soundtrack too.
And that's totally fair.
Because it's trying to, yeah.
But at the same time, I'm not super knowledgeable about things in music and things of that nature. So, but that was just my kind of raw reaction to it. Was like, oh gosh, this is kind of annoying at times.
If I remember correctly, every time Barry's character was messing with the harmonium, there was, In the background, as he was, you know, also playing some notes, there was like a harpsichord instrument playing or some type of instrument playing in the background. Yeah. And so, we don't really know too much about Barry's character, but it seems like he definitely has an interest in music. So maybe that was like what he was hearing in his head, but he's, you know, playing this imperfect instrument because it was broken and he was trying to fix it. So maybe he was hearing the music in his head, but he couldn't quite make it sound the way he wanted to, because you see him like trying to play something, but it's just not coming out right. And you hear the music in the background, and that's, I mean, for me, like whenever I play an instrument, I always hear, you know, this is how I want it to sound, and start playing. It's like, no, don't quite have it right yet. And then you have to keep practicing at it, and then you get it to that point. And at the end of the movie, it seems like he's pretty proficient with it, because he actually starts playing something for
Lena. Yeah, he likes to play it for Lena. Yeah, I think this movie also had, looking at humanity and maybe the way the world's set up, is you do have people who fall through the cracks on a social level, like Barry. When they get out of college, they go into the real world. He's clearly a very lonely person. He didn't really talk to anyone at work. He didn't really have a girlfriend. The only people he has is sisters who badgered him about everything all the time and told him how he was weird, how no one liked him, and how he needed to get a girl. And I think this movie, the fact that he makes that I thought that scene where he actually called the phone sex like worker really said a lot about his character, because he really wasn't doing it. He was going to pay $90 an hour to talk to somebody because he didn't have anyone else to talk to.
Okay, I'm going
to
be honest, and maybe this is exactly what the movie's trying to say. Maybe the movie's totally directed at me and saying, hey, you're a jerk. But I personally did not like Barry. Until the very end, there's a scene where the guys that are harassing him are following him, and they run into his car. He gets out of the car, he grabs a crowbar, and he just, like, he looks at him, he's like, come on. And they walk at him, he just smacks one guy in the head, knocks him out. The next guy comes, smacks him in the head, knocks him out. I'm like, that was the only time that I really was like, I like this guy. He's awesome, because he finally, these guys are kind of harassing him. He's kind of a pushover in the movie. He kind of lets people do whatever they want to him. And I guess that's kind of why I didn't like him. I was like, come on, man, stand up for yourself.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. You know, I'll give you this much. You know, he's not necessarily the most likable character in the world, but I did feel for him. I really did.
I felt for him, and I
connected with him, so I was rooting for him.
Okay, yes, exactly. That's why in that scene I'm like, yes, finally. I didn't really like him until then, but I was rooting for him the whole time. But I wasn't like, man, this guy's just awesome.
Well,
I didn't
really dislike him. I just felt more or less I felt bad for him.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Anything.
But when he goes up and just like knocks those guys out, yeah, Lena's with him, and he's kind of protecting Lena. And so he kind of just goes up, makes sure, takes care of them, and then goes back and checks on her to see if she's okay. And so when that scene happened, I was like, yes. Finally, you like stood up for yourself. You just put like your anger at people, and the way they treated you was coming out on these douchebags. Like, it was awesome.
Well, yeah, and he went all the way to Utah to find this guy who had been harassing him through the phone sex worker, and he just stuck it up to him and he said, "I want my money back and leave me the frick alone." And you could see he really stood his ground, and the guy literally marches him, stares him blank in the face, and is just like, "Okay," and that's it. Yep. That's the result. That's that. And oh, by the way, that guy was played by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Love that guy.
Absolutely hilarious. Philip Seymour Hoffman. Well, you'll see him again in other Paul Anderson movies, but he's only in the movie for maybe 10 minutes. But man, every scene he's in is just hilarious.
So funny. I'm laughing about it. Just thinking about
just,
it right now.
He just called whenever Barry actually calls the guy up on the phone. He's like, "Yeah, f you." Like, no. Shut the f up and go away. Just stop leaving. We're going to take your money, and you're just going to deal with it. Basically,
and then that's when he decides to go to Utah.
He has Utah. He's like, "You think you got problems? You get nothing, man." And then that's when eventually, at the end of the movie, he does make his way to Utah and finally sticks it to the guy. Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go ahead and rate these movies. If you guys were going to give this movie a rating, what would you give it? Bama, we'll start with you.
I guess I would give this a B+. Like I said, there were some pacing things about it that I didn't really like. Character-wise, especially from the viewpoint of Barry, very good. I would have liked to have some more background on like some of his sisters. Lena could have used a little more background, but I mean, it's not really necessary. But for me, I would like a little more character background on that. But yeah, I'd say it's overall pretty good.
Stoll, how about you?
I think a B is too nice.
but I think a C is too harsh. So I guess I'm going to go with a B minus. I really, and part of that is because of my enjoyability with it. I think that there's some cinematography that's really amazing in it. I think they do a good job with Barry's character. I think Adam Sandler is exceptional. But I think there are a lot of things that I personally struggled with that just were like, eh, I don't think that they did it the way that they could have done it. I think it could have been better. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a B minus.
I also am going to give this a B minus. It was a tough call. I like this movie. B minus is not bad. Don't give me that face. A B minus is not bad. A B minus is still above average, okay?
I think I'm just surprised that, yet again, I have liked a movie more than you two.
Listen, I'm just saying, I think this is a good movie. It's got great merits. I think I'm going to stall. Cinematography's great. Adam Sandler's great. I think the writing's great. I think the style's great. But I think Paul Thomas Anderson gets a lot better after this movie. And this movie's a good movie. He makes some great movies. He makes some phenomenal movies down the road. And maybe it's unfair to compare him to his later movies, but watching this, there was a lot of things I was confused about with what he was doing with the style, like the lens flare being an example. You know, some of the stuff you said you were confused about, I was also confused about looking at. And maybe I'll wake up next week and all the answers will come to me. Not that there are easy answers, but I mean, it was hard for me to make heads or tails of what he was trying to say with some of these scenes. I think on a technical level, this is an A+. I think all that stuff's great. I think the acting's great. But I think overall, this movie just didn't do it for me as well as some of the other movies we've seen, and as well as other Anderson movies have proven they can do some great things. So, you know, we're going to give this one a B- on a personal level. This is a great movie, but for me, I'm just going to just a B-.
I'd like to point out that this, like we've said before, this movie is not for everybody. This has definitely got a kind of a weird style to it, so this is not for
you
everybody.
You need to go into this with a certain expectation. Do not expect an Adam Sandler movie. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Absolutely
because
not.
if you go into this movie expecting something different, you are gonna hate this movie.
However, I will say this: I haven't seen a ton of Adam Sandler movies, but I think this may be one of his best performances.
As far as his actual acting goes, I think this is probably his best performance
as an actor
in his career. I mean, maybe not as a comedian, but as an actor, I feel like this character's far more deep and interesting than any of the other characters played, and I think he pulls it off. All right, well, we're gonna go ahead and move into our buzz section. And we're going to go ahead and start with Daniel. What are you buzzed about?
Assassin's Creed 3. Okay. I am stoked about this game. I've already started playing it. It came out this past week on October 30th. Happy birthday, Bama.
Yay!
I've already started playing it, and I already love it. There's already been a plot twist. I'm about 6-ish to 8-ish hours into the game. I wish I could have been more, but I've had classes and tests and things like that, so haven't really had the chance to get into it a whole lot yet. There's already been a plot twist in the game, which threw me off guard, didn't see it coming. Doesn't change the whole series by any means. It's just in the context of this game, it was a plot twist. I feel like they're doing a really good job with this character for this new assassin. His name's Connor, and I can't remember his full Native American name right now. It's like a 20-letter name. He does have a Native American name. The character in it is half European, half Native American. He grows up in the Native American culture, and so that's kind of what's going on. It's set in the time period of the Revolutionary War, so it's around right now. He grows up to be a part of the Revolutionary War in, you know, 1770s, stuff like that. So that's kind of where the game is set. I love it. I feel like they've done a really good job with the gameplay. You can feel the free running and the climbing that goes on in the game is a little bit smoother than before, and it was already greatly improved from Assassin's Creed 1 to Assassin's Creed 2. They had improved on it. I think they've improved on it again. So this game is awesome for me. I've really enjoyed it so far. That's probably what I'm going to go do as soon as I finish this podcast is go play that game.
Well, that's cool. You are fortunate enough to have the time. Me and Daniel both went and picked the same, but now we're both super excited. Unfortunately, I have had just one of the busiest weeks of my semester so far. And so I haven't been able to crack this one open. I've cracked it open, so to speak. But I have not been able to put much time into it yet. I haven't played it. So I'm excited about it. And folks, I'm not a massive Assassin's Creed fan, but I was so impressed by what I was seeing with all the build-up that I had. I went and picked it up. It looks great.
And I am a massive Assassin's Creed fan, and I think this has the potential to be maybe the best one they've ever done. And I'm only 8 hours in, and I feel like this probably could be the best one they've done. I would like they did enhance some of the multiplayer. I really enjoyed the multiplayer in Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. I haven't got a chance to play it yet. I'll probably do that once I finish that campaign. I'll let you guys know how that is. I am excited to get to that, but right. Awesome game.
Cool.
If you have played any of the other games and you enjoyed them, you will enjoy this one.
Cool.
So,
all right, Bama. So, what are you excited about? Are you light and fired?
Well, what I'm excited about, it actually comes out exactly a week from today, and I know you're going to enjoy this too.
Oh yes.
The movie Lincoln.
Yes.
Coming out.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. Before we get into this, I'm sorry. This ties to Paul Thomas Anderson because it stars the man, one of the greatest actors alive, Daniel Day-Lewis, who was also in There Will Be Blood. Just thought I'd be right there. Okay.
I mean, this movie is going to be phenomenal. Just based on some of the people I've looked on the cast list for this movie, it's going to be phenomenal. Here's a few of the names for those of you that don't know. Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yes.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, yeah. Playing the same character.
Probably. And Sally Field.
I mean, she's very good.
Those are probably the four biggest names on here.
I do. Oh, no. We got a couple fans. For some of you more hardcore nerd fans out there, we got Jack Errol Haley, who played Freddy Krueger in the most recent Nightmare on Elm Street and played Rorschach in Watchmen. He's definitely worth noting. And a personal favorite here is Jared Harris. I love this dude. Now, this guy's a smaller actor, but he's played on Mad Men. He played the bad guy in Fringe for a couple seasons, and he played Moriarty in the most recent Sherlock Holmes movie. Also a great casting choice.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of big-name actors, not only just, you know, from past, but there's also some pretty present actors that are phenomenal in this. And I've actually read some articles about Daniel Day-Lewis pretty much becoming Lincoln to play this role. For those of you that don't know much about him, he's what they call a method actor.
A hardcore method actor.
I mean, dives straight into a character and almost becomes whoever he's playing. Some of the actors and actresses would actually get text messages and phone calls from him being Lincoln. Like, he would say a quote from Lincoln, or he would...
Wouldn't it be awesome to get a phone call from Abe Lincoln?
That'd be awesome. Like, the director, Steven Spielberg, said that he got a call from Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln, and he's like, you know, you've heard recordings of Lincoln, like the crappy animatronic thing at Disney World, but when I talked to Lewis on the phone, that's what I always pictured Lincoln sounding like. So, I mean, this guy really gets into character.
Well, they referred to him on the set as Mr. President.
Yes.
And his chair, I saw a picture of when they're filming, said Lincoln on the back of it, not Daniel Day-Lewis. And I know he actually walked around, like, when he said become the character's name, just on set. This is like he lives and breathes the yes. character. When he went to a Constantly. Restaurant, he was dressed as Abe Lincoln. Out of the 19th century, he was the character for a couple months.
And if you haven't seen a picture of it, of Lincoln, this new movie, you need to see it.
Oh, no, don't watch a picture. Go watch the trailer.
Well, the trailer, obviously, of course, but, like, just a picture of Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln, it's creepy how much he looks what we feel Abraham Lincoln looks like. Like, it is phenomenal makeup work, phenomenal face. It's just awesome. Like, he looks exactly like Abraham Lincoln.
He's definitely got the beard down.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. This is something that's been on my mind for a couple weeks that I haven't talked about because I was holding out. And I thought, you know, this won't make it to the podcast. But then it just hit me this last weekend. I'm going to talk about this stinking movie. It's Prometheus, okay? This movie came out on Blu-ray, probably 3 weeks ago now, maybe. And I went and picked it up on Blu-ray, got it on a sale on Amazon. I got a sale with that, Alien and Aliens, all three. And I finally managed to cut some time out this weekend to watch all three of them. This movie is incredibly polarizing. We've mentioned it a couple times in the podcast already. I think after watching all three of them, this one might be my favorite. Now, Prometheus will never be a classic. It will never be Alien. It won't stand. It will not be in that mythos of legendary science fiction movies. But after I've watched it, the third time I've seen it now, I like it every time more every time I see it. Now, Alien is also a classic. Huge respect for it. And Aliens, they're all classics. But I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, you know what? People can hate on this movie for being vague and a bit ambiguous and not answering questions. And here's what I think you need to do. I think you need to go and rethink why you're watching the movie. That movie is loaded with so many philosophical ideas, interesting things to say about humanity, interesting things to say about the concept of God. lots of different things. It's not trying to shove beliefs down your throat. It's presenting some ideas in a way that will get you to think about some concepts that the directors are tossing around. I really like this movie. In fact, I even love this movie. And I have heard people knock this movie down recently like no one, no other. I mean, about how it's vague, doesn't answer questions. And you know what I really like about this movie? Is they don't talk down to you as an audience member. That's why I don't like it, in fact, is because they don't baby feed you everything. They don't tell you exactly how to take everything in the movie. They leave a lot of things open, but they still leave you. It's like, imagine if someone gives you a puzzle, right? And they give you the outline, and they say, here, finish the puzzle. That is what Prometheus does, because it assumes that you, as the audience, will want to go back and watch it again. It assumes you, as the audience, will be smart enough to put the pieces together and say, oh, well, this is how it goes. And maybe not everyone's puzzle is going to look exactly the same, because maybe we're going to have different interpretations. But you know what? I think this is a form of filmmaking I really like that I wish was done more often, because it speaks to, hey, we think you as an audience is intelligent. We think you guys like to think, and we think we want you guys to sit down and have a 45-minute coffee discussion after this movie is done. That is what I think of Prometheus, and I think it's phenomenal, and I think it's my favorite. It's not a classic, and maybe it's not better than the other two. I think I like it better. But this has been something that's been on. I pushed it off, and I finally got to watch them all this past week, and I said, you know what? I think I like Prometheus better than Alien. I think I like it better than Aliens. So, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. You guys have any other things you want to close out, cut on this week?
I will close out this week. I'll actually read a quote from Abraham Lincoln himself, since I'm so buzzed about the Lincoln movie. I think it's only right to say a quote that a great president once said. Better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak out and remove all doubt.
Wow.
That's boom. That's one of my favorite quotes.
That is a really good quote.
That's a very good quote. So, basically, don't be a fool.
Don't be a fool. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and talk about... I've got three movies here that are opening this weekend that we're worth talking about. One of them I think we're actually going to spend a couple minutes talking about. One of them is... the first one is Wreck-It Ralph.
Definitely want
to
see
this. I am on board. In fact, I'm actually already scheduled to see this movie. By the time this podcast is out, I will have seen this movie. How about that? This movie looks really good. You know, when I first saw the trailer, I was like, I don't know. But then when I actually started to look closer at this trailer, I realized what they were doing. They're taking everything from arcades and gaming culture and putting it into one animated movie. Because you've got so many bad guys from the video games, and they're working in like M. Bison. You got Dr. Eggman / Robotnik. You got Bowser. You got the ghost from Pac-Man. You got the guy from World of Warcraft. I mean, holy crap, dude. They got everything in the kitchen sink in there. And they have these things where it looks like a Mario Kart-like type of game, or they've got a Halo-looking game in there. And I think, you know, it just looks like a great storyline for kids, you know? What if the bad guy doesn't want to be the bad guy anymore? What do you know? I don't know. It just looks like a cute movie. It looks like a lot of fun. It looks like if I was 30 and had kids, I would love to take my kids to see this movie. The next movie I've got on my list is The Man with Iron Fist, presented by Quentin Tarantino. I think this movie looks freaking awesome. I think it looks like a great, fun time.
Definitely looks like one of those cheesy Asian films, you know, people with supernatural abilities of basically gliding upwards in the air, up onto
and slowing
a ledge,
down time.
And somehow we can slowly fall down at an angle, too. But, I mean, it does look like it's going to have some pretty good action in it.
It's got Russell Crowe playing in a bad movie. I can't wait.
Yes. So it.
I always bring a knife to a gunfight.
Terrible.
I mean, come on.
Quote.
Just, yeah, exactly. It looked like a good, really good time. I think it looks interesting. The last thing is Flight. That's a Denzel Washington movie. Stoll's not going to like this. I am not the world's biggest Denzel Washington fan. There's a lot of people out there who love this dude. I think he's okay. I think if he would pick better movies, I would like him a lot more. But I think he just does a lot of movies in which he plays the exact same character in almost every movie.
Did you like Remember the Titans?
That was good. Okay. And then he's played that character eight times.
As long as you're okay with that one.
I didn't love it. I liked it. But I've been so oversaturated with that I don't love it.
I retract my statement.
I thought Book of Eli was good, but I don't love it. I think that he plays the Remember the Titans character. Plays the angry black character from
Man on Fire.
That was a good Denzel Washington movie, was Man on Fire. Okay, that was a great one. But, I mean, he just plays the same character in the movie. Go ahead, Stoll. I know you're getting punched at me.
No, I really like Denzel Washington. I think this movie looks interesting.
I might go see it because of Denzel Washington, but I really do like Denzel Washington. But I think that's a fair assessment. He does play a similar character in a lot of his movies. So, but I really like him.
All right, we're going to go ahead and close out. Before we close out, I want to let you guys know you can actually follow us in several different ways this week. We finally got our operation up and running here. And the first one to mention is we do have a Facebook group, BCD Flixers Movie Review. Get on, look us up, find us, check us out there, like us. We want to be liked. Tell your friends about us. Tell your friends about us. Like us.
And that, it'll help us out if you guys like us, because then we can do some different things with our pages the more likes we get. Yes. So that'll really help us out if you guys could get some likes on there.
We are going to have, by the time this podcast is up, we're going to have a Twitter you can follow, at BCD Flixters. Pretty straightforward. If you want to look at personal tweets, I've got mine at BigCalKenobi91 and at MastersReview on Twitter. And please, if you guys want, send us some feedback. Tell us what you like, what you don't like. Send some movie requests our way. Send some questions our way. We will work it into the podcast somehow.
Make sure they're movies that are on Netflix.
Yes.
Because that's kind of the basis of our whole thing, is movies from Netflix.
If you guys want to hear about a certain movie that just hit theaters or something like that, give us a buzz and maybe we can work it into our podcast somehow. We want to see what you guys think, and because we, you know, you guys are our listeners, so... Our next week's movie is God Bless America. That'll be all for our podcast this week. And until next time, just don't forget, Han shot first. Screw you, George Lucas.
Kill the Batman.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I'm a dude. Laying the dude disguises enough, dude.
Game over.